not be. That would have to be a ruling. Interesting, through the war years, you know, there was some of the girls came out in 1942, and the ruling then, of course, was there were different rules, and as the years went by, the rules, I guess, got revised and changed, because I know some of the girls came out while the war was still on, and oh my goodness me, the convoys, they went miles around to try and avoid the submarines, whereas we didn't have to do that, thank goodness.
So how many days was your journey?
It took about 5 days. Of which I spent most of it in the daytime up on deck, because I'm not a very good sailor.
Oh! So you were seasick most of the time?
Oh, yes. And when we landed in Halifax, I went down to the dining room, and the waiters all looked at me and said, "Where'd you come from?"
So because,
one of the nurses would go and get sandwiches, and I'd be up on the deck, and I stayed out on the deck until then at night, but I never did go to the dining because the smell of the food just...
Oh, so do you remember what the food was like?
On that day when I ate, oh yes, it was delicious, but I had sort of lived off sandwiches.
Okay. So do you remember any of the other people that were on board your ship?
No,
not a lot. Okay. So tell me about the experience of landing in Canada after 5 days at sea.
Well, it was, as far as I was concerned, alleluia.
And what was the experience of going through customs and then finally getting onto the train?
Well, it was at Pier 21. I'm sure you've heard of Pier 21. And you could see the big signs, letters, and so... like being tanner, so I had to go where the tea was, and then they just checked your passport, and there was nothing horrendous about going through, and then you were escorted to the train. And of course the Red Cross were very concerned when I got on the train because I had been so seasick. And I said, "No, I'm on land, I'm fine."
So you do remember meeting the Red Cross escort officers? You remember meeting them?
It was just, like as I say, I dealt with the Red Cross on the ship, because it was a hospital ship. And then when they found out that I was okay on the train, it wasn't until I landed in New Westminster that I came in contact with the Red Cross again.
And what was your experience with them like?
Oh, they were very kind. I mean, they they were more curious. They asked, "Want to know what went on?" And how was life over in England and this sort of thing. And
they were all female, that's correct, right?
No, there were some males too.
Oh, there was males, okay.
Yeah. Because I was taken up to Red Cross House at New Westminster. And so consequently, that's where I saw males as well as females.
And on the trains and on the ship, were there males as well?
On the ship, no, they were... mostly females. I think the orderlies would have been looking after the returning vets.
Mm-hmm.
And there was doctors on. I mean, the doctor checked me out when he found out. Of course, first thing he said to me, "Was I pregnant?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "No, just not a very good sailor."
So... do you remember what you expected Canada to be like before you arrived?
Well, my husband tried to explain to me about the mountains, and he said, you know, you know about Norway and things like that, and he said that's what British Columbia and Vancouver is like. And I knew I was going to be living in a city, and that he had got like a bedroom sharing part of a house. That much I did know.
And was Canada what you expected it to be? Like, did it match up with any?
I think so. Oh yes, I didn't feel I didn't feel let down or anything.
So what were some first impressions that you got of Canada?
Well, one of the first things that I found very amusing was that my mother-in-law had quite a time with the rationing. And she could never seem to manage with the sugar and the butter and what have you. And I'd turn around and say, oh, here. You can have these coupons. And she'd say, you know, I said, oh, goodness me, our rationing was far less than, to me, they talked about rationing in Canada. To me, it didn't seem like rationing at all.
Yeah, it was
so
very different.
And one of the treats, you get to laugh at this, was to go to, as was referred to as a drugstore, and be able to get an ice cream cone.
Yeah, because I guess you wouldn't have been able to get that in.
Oh, but one of the things, so coming across Canada on the train, when you got to Winnipeg, you had to get off that train. They switched you over to another train because that particular train only went as far as Winnipeg and then went back to Halifax, whereas the other train from Winnipeg came through to Vancouver. And so we had a few hours. So there were about five of us decided, okay, we'd all heard about banana splits. So we had to go and find out just exactly what a banana split was. And it was hilarious because here's all the traffic coming at us in the opposite direction. So we all held hands and then and crossed Main Street, went in, and we all had a banana split. Then when we came back, we couldn't find the blooming train. And they'd shunted things around. And we found it, of course. But on the first part of the train, the porter that looked after us was a Negro. He was the nicest, kindest person, making sure that we were all comfortable, and those that had children were got, because you had to go down to the dining room, and then at night make sure that they got into their bunk beds okay. And washing, of course, was quite hilarious because you had this little tiny basin, you know, try and wash yourself all over. And it was interesting. Of course, some of the girls would get off early hours of the morning at different stations, especially those on the prairies. And you'd look to see who was getting off and, oh, how many people were there to meet them. And then in the daytime, of course, seeing the prairies, nothing in sight, just no trees, no nothing.
So it sounds like there was quite a bit of camaraderie on board.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
So what was your experience of getting off the train? You said you were
when I was informed I had to get off at New Westminster, I said, well, my husband's going to be in Vancouver. Can't I go into Vancouver? No, you have to get off here because this is the closest station to where your in-laws live, which they lived at Fort Kells. So then, that was when the Red Cross took over, and they were the ones that communicated. I guess they sent the message through to Vancouver to say, come to Red Cross House in New Westminster, because that's where your wife is. And, oh, I guess it took about an hour and a half for him to get there, because there was just Kingsway, the highway, to get there. And it was quite a shock when I saw him, because I'd never seen him in civvies.
Yeah, so he came to the Red Cross House.
And yeah.
When did you eventually meet your in-laws?
Oh, well, a half hour later.
Okay, and how was that experience?
Oh, well, they were all excited, and the mayor of Woodstock and his wife were visiting. So I really did get a welcome.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you didn't feel there was any animosity towards you not being a Canadian?
No. Because actually my in-laws were both English. Had Grandad Tanner, my father-in-law, he came to Canada when he was 14. And yes, my husband's mother died, and her best friend lived over in England, and so she came out to Canada and married Fred's dad. So, no, there was no animosity that way.
Okay. And where did you eventually live?
Well, we lived in Vancouver. We actually, in the eastern part of Vancouver, we shared this room, which was a lot of fun. We had our own bedroom, but we shared the kitchen, bathroom, and the dining room table. And the lady that owned the house was very short, and she had one of these lamps over the table that she used to pull down. Well, Fred and I were tall, and we kind of hit our eyes, so I'd put it up. So there was this silent tussle over the lamp. Never a word was said. It was just one of those things. She'd bring it down and I'd put it up. And then the company that he worked for owned an apartment building. And so there was a vacancy came up, and it was very interesting because the lady that was moving out, her last name was Tanner. So we didn't move into her apartment because there was another couple that worked for the same company, and they wanted a bigger apartment, so they took that one and we took theirs. But we were able to take over her telephone. Otherwise we wouldn't have been able to get a phone.
Oh, how come?
Oh, no. There was that was one of the things that was a shortage of doing that sort of thing. The same like furniture, buying furniture. You went and ordered something, you had to wait for it to come in. It had to be made. Mm-hmm. See, with the, none of those things took place during
because everything's going towards the war effort, so people aren't making.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And she was moving. In fact, she was leaving Canada. She was going back down to Australia. And so we just went in, and Fred just said, made out that he was her son, and we got to go over the phone because the last name was the same.
So what was your apartment then? What was the furniture like?
We ordered a bed Chesterfield, one of those, not a pull-out one, but like a couch that you lifted and it opened up. And we ordered that and a large armchair and a small chair, occasional chair, and a bed. That was more or less, you were limited in what you could sort of buy. And we didn't have a lot of money. So, and I mean, that furniture, in fact, my youngest daughter still has the occasional chair.
So how are you received by the community that you're living in?
Oh, when we moved into the apartment, everybody, oh, and you're going to find this interesting. There was an elevator operator, a little older man, and he more or less was introducing me to somebody get in, and, oh, this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so. So I was made very welcome. Mm-hmm. And other people, and of course, I made contact with the Anglican Church. And I also knew, contacted the doctor because I had worked with him in the hospital over in England. Because he was Canadian and I'd already met he and his wife. So that really was wonderful too.
Mm, that sounds nice. That sounds like a very good community. So what differences were there between where you were born and your new home in Canada? And how did you adjust to these changes?
I still walked everywhere because the area where the apartment building wasn't too far from Stanley Park or English Bay. The shopping, the little stores, sort of was like a little shopping area that part wasn't so very different because I was used to having stores close to where we lived in both places. I think the biggest difference was the traffic going in the opposite direction. That took a little getting used to.
And what about the appliances in your kitchen? Would they have been the same?
Actually, there wasn't. Well, at least I had a fridge. We didn't have a fridge in England.
Oh, okay.
It was just a small fridge, and it was a gas stove. And I think one of the things that I did have to get used to in England, they had what was known as self-raising flour, whereas in Canada it was plain flour. And getting used to cooking,
So I've heard of war brides who left after a few years from Canada. Do you know any of the women like that?
No, not offhand.
Okay. So it seems like they left more because the conditions were so different where they ended up falling
think a lot of them just could not adjust. And a lot of them were absolute, their in-laws were just absolutely horrible to them.
Yeah.
That much I do know.
And did you ever consider leaving?
No.
Okay. So after you came to Canada, when was the first time that you saw your family again?
It was quite a few years. My youngest daughter was born in the October of 61, and my parents came to Canada for Christmas, 61. I didn't know anything about it. It was a complete surprise. And some of my friends were saying, you know, you really should say something to her. That's going to be such a terrific shock. Well, finally, something was said. And I said, what are they going to sleep on? Mm-hmm. So we had to go out and buy. That time we bought a bed, proper bed Chesterfield, that made into a bed. But my mother was very, very ill. And I think that was one of the reasons why they had decided that my husband had figured that my mum and dad should come out because she had cancer. Mm. And, of course, it was interesting when they did arrive. She said, you realize that this is the first time I've been called grandmother to my face. Because my Carolyn was 14 and Scott was 11. So that was, of course, Carolyn and Scott, they were just thrilled to bits. And then, of course, she was able to hold the baby. Mm-hmm. And she died the following October. So at least she got to meet them, and Carolyn and Scott. You know. Then my father moved out, came out to Canada to live.
Okay. We actually haven't talked about your children that much. Caroline was born in 1947?
Yeah, Caroline was born in 47, Scott was born in 50. And then Denise, 61. I lost two.
You lost two children mm-hmm. in between them.
That's why the gap.
Yeah. Okay, so you raised your children in Victoria, is that correct?
Yeah.
Mostly in Victoria. So what was
Actually, Caroline was born in Vancouver.
But you moved over to
Victoria. We came over to the island in 48.
Okay. So what was that experience like? What was that like, raising children in Victoria?
Well, we, when we first moved over here, we, again, to share, it was an old house, and it was divided into, there were four families living in it. There was one family in the basement of the house. There was another couple in the middle. There was another couple that had, like, the front room and one of the bedrooms upstairs. And we had the two bedrooms. One had been changed, and the kitchen, like the sink, had been put in, and a small gas stove. And after we'd been there a little while, we got permission so that we were able to take out part of the wall so that it was more like we could move from the bedroom through into the other room without having to go around. But we couldn't, when we moved over, the people that were living there wouldn't move out. The landlord had given them, told them they had to go. I don't know what they'd done. And trying to find a place to live with children was not very easy. They just didn't want children. And I don't know if it's because through the war years, families, maybe not so many children were born then because husbands being away and this sort of thing. Any rate, so there we were, because Carolyn and I sitting on the curb outside the house, and the other lady that lived on the other corner, she had like a boarding house, she came over and she said, you've got a bit of a problem. And I said, well, yes, we have. I said, we were supposed to move in up to the upstairs part of the house, but I said, they won't move out. And she said, oh. Well, she said, I know of a boarding house down on Cook Street, and I'm sure she'd be able to let you have a bedroom, you know. So at any rate, Fred went down and talked to Elsie and Bert, and we lived there. We stayed with them for a week, and we remained friends until both of them are now gone, but I still have a friend, Joyce, their daughter. She was 12 when we first met her, and she just had last June, celebrated her 70th birthday. But there.
Wow.
Well, then we moved there. And then, there's, it's still there, I think. There were an apartment building on the corner of Linden and Fort. And one of those became vacant. So we were able to move into that. Well, that was absolutely hilarious. The living room was huge. It was, I'd say, more or less going from there and halfway into that family room. That was the living room.
So that's what, 20 feet long?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
And there's us with that. All we had was Ben Chesterfield, the couch, the big chair with the arms, and the occasional chair. So we had one of those folding tables that you can get, and we stained it ourselves. So then we figured, well, we did have a dining room, so we had to get four chairs. And the kitchen was strictly on 2x4. I mean, this was hilarious, this huge living room and this little tiny kitchen, and there was a table that you could lift up. But if you did that to get to the bathroom, then you had to go around through the bedroom. And then the bedroom wasn't a bad size, but the other room, well, it was just big enough for a single bed, which was fine, because we just had Carolyn. And so we stayed there until the company that my husband worked for, there was a vacancy at the house out near Elk Lake. And John had died. That was the chap that was the manager running the store. And his wife didn't want to stay in the house. And so she said, would we like to move out there? Again, it was not a very big house, but it had a lovely garden. And you could walk down to Elk Lake. And so we stayed there. My son was born there. Then we bought a house on Alder Street. And this is where the Topaz Heights business comes in, because that's what Topaz Heights is all about. All those houses on Alder Street from, like where Blanchard goes along, up to Quadra. And Ptolemy and... I've forgotten the name of it. Anyway, we bought a house, and it was on Alder Street, and it was at the far end. It doesn't exist anymore, because when they widened the Findlayson, remember that, they had to take that house down.
And that was the first house that you bought?
And that was, yeah, the first house we bought, and we were very happy there. Because, well, Carolyn was able to go to Quadra school. Well, first of all, there was the, when she went to kindergarten, there was a school down Hillside and Douglas. It doesn't exist anymore. It got pulled down, and I think that's where the Times Colonies building is now. But she was able to, in those days, you didn't have to worry about children being kidnapped or anything, that sort of thing. And she went with another little girl, and then of course she went to Quadra school. And whilst we were there, an opportunity arose that we were able to build a house. We had talked about it, because I really missed being out near Elk Lake. So we built a house on Santa Clara. And that was in 1954. And I've been in this house now 17 years.
In this house here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was brand new.
Oh.
And sadly, in it all started when Denise was about 5. And I don't want to say anything unkind about my husband, but he was an alcoholic. And he liked women. That's all I'm going to say. Because he, he's done a lot of good work, so at that you know. But it was devastating. It took me a long time to get over it. But he gets talks with the kids, and you know, and we talk periodically, and but it that was when I went out to work. Well, I sold Fuller Brush at first, and then somebody knew that I was looking for a job, and so I got a phone call, and to see if go out to Butler Brothers, because Butler Brothers was a big firm in those days, and so I got interviewed and I got hired, and I worked up in the ready mix office. I was assistant ready mix dispatcher, and oh boy, a female.
And what was that experience like, working, being the only female?
Well, I must admit that some of the language on the other end of the telephone, when they heard a female voice, but okay, that's fine.